Hello, everybody in H10 land. This is Hanshin Tigers English News, and we are currently on Monday, May the 30th. That's right, we are recording a day late because we had a bit of an audio issue. This is episode 32, episode Ryota Arai. We are glad that Arai actually did something to merit being mentioned on the show, other than it just being episode number 32. Anyways, I'm T-Ray, the usual host, and with me as co-host today is...
Yeah, good old Joe again.
Good old Joe again. It's good to hear your voice again, Joe, for the second day in a row, actually. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Same as yesterday. It's actually a holiday here in the U.S. It's Memorial Day.
So. Nice. That's right. Happy Memorial Day. Yes, yes, indeed. All right. Sweet. Well, before we jump into today's show, let's talk a little bit about food and drink at Koshien Stadium. I know it's been a while since you've been at the stadium for a game, Joe, but did you have any kind of food or drink traditions or habits when you went to games?
Yeah, I actually, when I would go to the games, I would go to the Wendy's at the shopping mall next to the stadium. And then I think a couple years later, it actually closed down. So I think they pulled all the Wendy's out of Japan. But so, you know, it was always good to go get a hamburger and go to a baseball game. How much more American can you get than that? So
for sure, for sure. What about like inside the stadium? Did you ever eat any good food from within?
Yeah, I had one of the Kanemoto bentos, and I still have the bento box today, and I still use it sometimes.
Nice.
When I take my lunch to work, so it's kind of fun. What about
very
you?
Very cool, very cool. You ever get any mentions? Sorry, you ever get any mentions about the box?
Everybody asks if they see it, what is that? And, you know, it's kind of strange, but I end up having to explain it, but I get a lot of mentions that in the office anyways, because I have the Tigers calendar up on the wall and I keep track of the wins and losses on it. And everybody's like, oh, the Yankees. I'm like, no. Read what it says. They're not the Yankees.
Thank you that they're not the Yankees.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. So, as for me, I've got a favorite bento shop that I go to before games typically. And I did a post on the website about that, but instead of that, I'll talk a little bit about some of the players, menu. Lately I've been trying to get into eating some of the kind of food that I guess they link to some of the players. And so I had the ramen the other time that I went to the stadium, and I got the messe mori, which is like messenger sized portion of ramen. It was good stuff, and I think he should be proud of the fact that his name is attached to such a delicious food. So good on him. So on today's show, we are going to recap the week that was. We were on the road for the whole week. Then we're going to talk player of the week. We'll look at the Pacific League because we're jumping into interleague play, and then we are going to predict the week to come. So stick around. We will be right back. So, the week that was, we spent all week in Tokyo. Let's recap what happened to the Tigers. We started our week at Jingu Stadium facing the last place Yakult Swallows. And when we face last place teams, we like to win 2 out of 3, possibly 3 out of 3. Unfortunately, that was not the case this week, eh, Joe?
Oh, man. It was a tough week for this series. We definitely had a chance to win all 3. Put that way.
We sure did. We sure did. And certainly, you know, even up until the end of each game, we were in it, if not leading. And then disaster struck again, which has been kind of the theme for the team lately. But okay, let's jump into the action. We're going to go straight into Tuesday night when Atsushi Nomi was on the mound for us and Yagi was on the mound for them, a guy that I'd never heard of. But Yagi came out swinging, or should I say, we came out swinging against Yagi. He recorded 6 strikeouts to get his first 5 outs of the game. Struck out 4 in the first inning, and then struck out 2 in the second inning, and that's when the wheels fell off for him. He actually went the opposite way of strikeouts on the next 2 batters. He walked Toritani, which is no surprise because everybody walks Toritani. Then he walked Nomi, which was kind of a nice surprise for us. So with 2 outs, we've got runners on first and second, and Hojo knocks... both of them, or Yeah, he knocks both of them in, mm-hmm. and then Yamato knocked him in on the following, in the following at bat with another single. So we took a quick 3-0 lead, and then that extended to 4-0 when Nomi came through at the dish again with a sac fly this time after Toritani walk. Of course, after a couple other hits as well. So 4-0, and Nomi is coasting until the fourth inning when he allowed one run, and it was kind of an unfortunate one. A couple of walks, the second of which I thought was questionable. I thought that Yamada actually swung on his check swing. The umpires said otherwise. And then Ballantyne hit one up the middle, and it looked like it took a kind of weird bounce and it got past Hojo. So that was kind of unfortunate. But that was the one run they scored against Nomi, and he went 6 strong. 90 pitches only, Joe. Do you know why that might have been, or did you hear anything?
Yeah, I read that they pulled him because his elbow might have been... they had concerns with his elbow. So hopefully that's just a one-time thing, and, you know, he's fine after that. But they didn't send him down or anything, so hopefully it doesn't sound like it's too bad.
Well, he's scheduled to pitch Tuesday against the Rakuten Eagles, so yeah, I hope it's not too bad. Hopefully he'll be healthy through Interleague and beyond. Yeah. So 4-1 heading into the latter third of the game, because there were a couple of blank innings there. The Tigers extended it to 5-1 in the seventh on a Haraguchi home run. A nice shot to right field, opposite field, homer. But that's when the relief came in. And how's our relief been lately, Joe?
Oh, it's been perfect.
A perfect storm, a perfect mess, a perfect what a disaster. Yeah,
exactly.
So Ando came in and tanked, and actually he didn't even fully tank, but Takahashi helped him to tank, because Takahashi came in and I think allowed both runners to score.
Right.
Can you fill us in on how that happened again, Joe? Sorry.
I think Ando came in and gave up a couple walks, and then there was a fly ball, and then got a strikeout, and then I think they pulled him. After that, so he left, I think, runners on probably second and third, I believe, something like, and then Takahashi came in and gave up the hit right away.
Right.
So then those runs got charged to Ando, and those are his first charge runs of the year. So much for the zero ERA. And then,
well, it was good while it lasted.
Yeah. 2 months. That's not too bad. And then, Takahashi came in and, got the out to end the inning after that. So we made it through the seventh there, giving up 2 runs. So at that point, it's 5-3. So it's not looking so bad. We come up 1-2-3 for us in the eighth. And then the eighth for them, we bring in Kyuji Fujikawa and has a rough inning. Gave up 3 walks. And then
there was an error before that.
Yeah, an error, and then 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, a walk, and then a strikeout. So bases loaded, and he really gets himself into a jam, but gets the strikeouts when he needs them. But, you know, as relief, you shouldn't have to load the bases. Oh, sorry. Yeah, with the error, he did walk one in then.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
So he gave up another run there, walking one in. So it's tough to see him struggle in his relief attempts, so.
Right. And we're still up at this point 5-4, but it's looking pretty bad because our relief has done 2 innings of work and allowed 3 runs already. Unfortunately, we came in the ninth and actually battled back and got a couple more runs. Fukudome, Gomez, Haraguchi, and Takayama with 4 consecutive hits off of Josh Lukey. And that was great to see because he had shut us down in previous series during this year. And we don't like him anyways for reasons that we'll not mention on the show. Anyways, nice to get two extra runs there. So we're up 7-4 and we bring in Mateo with a 3-run cushion, which seems to be a pretty safe thing to do. Unfortunately, it wasn't by any stretch of the imagination a clean inning for Mateo. Base hit, or pardon me, single, double, strikeout, sac fly, walk, and then the third out of the inning. So he got Ballantyne with runners on what would it have been, first and second or first and third? And if Ballantyne hits a home run here, it's walk off, it's lost for the Tigers. And he didn't come that far from hitting it. It was definitely a nerve-wracking ending for us. But 7-5, Nomi gets the win. Mateo undeservedly gets the save. And we're off to a good start to the series. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we had two errors today. One for Takahashi with a wild pitch. And then Hojo with a fielding error. So,
right.
This is the start of a trend that you'll like to see for the whole week here. with the errors. So the fielding's been a little tough.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And that's been the case for much of the year, but it seems to be getting worse as we go on. One more note. We actually walked 10 of their hitters, including Yamada 3 times, Ballantyne twice, and actually Kawabata twice. So their number 2, 3, and 4 hitters racked up 7 walks against us. Pretty ugly stuff. But we managed to squeak out the win. So let's move on to Wednesday. And we bring Yokoyama to the mound, who has, you know, started the year very well, or at least since he got called up at the start of May. So I think he had 3 really good starts heading into this one. But the streak ends at 3. We faced Kyle Davies, and it didn't really matter who we faced because they have a guy named Vladimir Ballantyne in their lineup. And when he, you know, sees the ball well... He took Yokoyama yard twice to the deepest part of the field and well beyond the fence both times. Monster home runs. So 5 runs in the first 3 innings against Yokoyama. Actually 6, pardon me. 5 of them coming off the bat of Ballantyne. And the other one? I'm losing here. I'm not really sure. Maybe it was an unearned run. It was an unearned run. Sorry, do you remember what happened there, Joe?
No, I don't, but I have Yokoyama only actually got charged with 4 of those 6 runs.
Right.
So there was error on the first one from Haig, I believe.
Ah, that's right, that's right. Yeah, there was the error by Haig.
To get one of the runners on so that when it brought him in with the home run, they didn't charge him with that one.
That was Yamada in the first inning. Okay, gotcha. Right. Yokoyama got pulled early, but actually what happened was before he allowed the second home run, we actually came back, stormed back in the 3rd inning and took the lead. We were down 3-0 and Gomez hit a 3-run home run, which followed a Hojo RBI double, which took place earlier in the inning. So 4 runs in the top of the 3rd, but then Yokoyama came out and gave up 3. And then the very next inning, Tanabo gave up 2. So we're down 8-4. This one is looking like it's in the books, but remember it's Jingu and remember it's Yakult pitching. So anything can happen and anything did happen. And it started in the 6th inning.
Yeah, with the Takayama single to right. And then Haig came up and struck out. But then Toritani comes up to bat and actually gets one to left field, home run. So kind of a rarity from Toritani, but actually gets there. And so that gets us 2 more runs. And then Arai comes up with a walk. Hojo comes with a walk. And then Itayama strikes out. And then Fukudome comes in and gets a double to get another run. So we get 3 runs, and it's now 7-8. So we have a chance. And then, let's see.
Captain Walk comes up in the 8th and gets a walk. And then Arai gets plunked. So Arai got on base twice without actually swinging his bat or making connection. And then it was Kano that did the damage to tie things up. And that also came against Luki. So that was pretty cool to see us get that. So tie 8-8. But they bring in Andrasek. They said, enough of our junky relievers. Let's bring in our competent reliever. And Andrasek shut us out the rest of the 8th. So we weren't able to rally off of the Kano RBI. And then we still had runners, I think, on 1st and 2nd or 1st and 3rd at that point. But Andrasek, he did it. Andrasek actually got us in the 9th as well. So we go to the bottom of the 9th, tied 8-8. And instead of bringing in Mateo, because the day before didn't go so well, we bring in Kyuji. And actually, his day before didn't go so well either. But how did this one go for us, Joe?
Well, when you the first thing you do is you give up a double, you know you're going to be fighting, and QG doesn't have a whole lot of fight, it seems, this year. So he gives up a double and then gives an intentional walk and then sack bunt, and then they bring in a pinch hitter to get a sack fly to end the game. So, you know, it was kind of tough to see, you know, the team end with that kind of a thud and give a sayonara loss. So,
yep.
Especially when we battled back and made it a game, it got pretty exciting. And then all of a sudden to see it get, you know, torn away from you like that's tough to see.
For sure, yeah. I mean, it's great to see the bats come to life, especially after last week. And we talked about how they put together a whole bunch of hits last week, especially against the Carp, but they were mostly singles. And then, you know, in this one we had 2 home runs. Last game we had a home run as well. And we had 10 hits in this one, including 5 extra base hits. And then we also had 8 walks, and so we had 18 base runners. And we scored 8 runs, which is actually pretty decent production. But our pitching just could not hold it together. And that includes starter and relievers. So, yeah, it was kind of a tough one to lose, and especially in the walk-off fashion. But as we're about to see, Joe, it was not the only walk-off of the week for us.
Yikes.
So we go into Thursday's action, and we bring quote-unquote ace Shintaro Fujinami to the mound, a guy who's really been struggling with control this whole year. And they bring Ryan Yasuhiro Ogawa to the mound, who is their, I suppose, ace or maybe best pitcher, whatever. Both of these guys are really young. Both of them are expected to do great things. And so it was expected to be kind of a low-scoring game. That was not the case, was it, Joe?
No, the bats definitely came alive in this game. You know, and then Fujinami being Fujinami, or at least a Hanshin starting pitcher this year, decided to give up a run in the first. So it's kind of the norm here this year. So he gives a Valentin RBI triple. Is that triple?
It was an RBI. It was a third.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So gives up the one run in the first, and then we come up and lead off the second with a Gomez home run to center field. So, you know, battling back right away. And you'll see
He hit it to the same spot as Valentin did the day before, which was kind of cool to see. It's almost like they're in a hitting contest or something here. So Gomez is like, I can do what you did yesterday. But at the bottom of the inning, Valentin said, well, can you hit another one? Because I'm about to.
Yeah.
So bottom of the third. Sorry to cut you off there. But another single, then followed by a home run. So a 2-run shot. So the lead we tied it up. And the lead goes right back to the Swallows in the bottom of that third inning.
But at the top of the fourth, Hanshin comes back and says, you know what? I think we may have gotcha. Fukudome comes up and blasts one to left. Then Gomez gets a fly to center trying to get another home run. And then Haraguchi comes up and blasts another one to left. So we get 2 solo shots to tie it back up at 3-3.
And things are looking really good, you know, except that it seems like the following inning after we tie things up, something else happens, and that's exactly what happened here. Fujinami again lets the leadoff runner on, and then after 2 outs, he gives up a big bash to Kawabata, who hit a 2-run shot to deep right field. I mean, there was no mistaking this. Fujinami said after the game that on both of the home runs that he allowed, that he was just off by a little bit on his pitches. I mean, he kind of threw it close to where he wanted to, but both times, the guys just seemed to be waiting on the right pitch, and they got it, and they made no mistake. One more note about Fujinami. He actually went 2 more innings and was clean in those innings. So he went 7 innings, 5 earned runs, and he only walked 1 guy, so his control was okay, but the problem is maybe he was a little bit too precise because he allowed 11 hits, including those 2 bombs. Fujinami, for 5 straight games now, has let the first batter of the game reach base, whether by walk or by hit. 5 in a row. And then also he's allowed at least 1 run in the first inning of 7 of his 9 starts so far. So there's something clearly wrong with him this year. I know that in previous years, I think it was his sophomore year, maybe it wasn't last year, he had the same issue where early in the games he just was allowing way too many runs, but it's back. And this is just not very becoming of somebody who's meant to be an ace pitcher and is meant to be scouted by major league teams. Something he needs to fix. So anyways, after seven innings, we are tied. After Fujinami leaves, we're tied at seven because we actually came back after Kawabata's home run. And we got two in the top of the sixth, courtesy of Matt Haig's double to left. And that came after a Gomez hit and a Haraguchi
hit by plunky. Pitch. Yeah.
Hit by pitch. Yes. So there we go. We're tied up and the seventh and eighth play out completely clean. The top of the ninth plays out completely clean. So Josh Lukey got the better of us on this game and Andrasek again shut us down in this one. Then the bottom of the ninth, we said, okay, well, let's see. Tuesday, QG didn't go so well. Mateo didn't go so well. And Wednesday, QG didn't go so well. I think it's Mateo's turn to blow it. And so we bring in Mateo. And guess what?
Walk, single, hit by pitch.
Center. Bases loaded, no outs. Yeah.
A short fly to center, which was, you know, didn't score anybody, so it was great. And then here comes the game-winning single. So it was tough to see. Only got one out. That really was just that center single and gave up the winning run. So two games in a row, sayonara losses.
Yes. Yeah, that really hurts. I think that happened last year against the Dragons. We lost two walk-offs in a row in their barn. It was either the end of April or somewhere around there. Anyways, I got a question on Twitter about this game from @MosesGuthrie17, and he said, why did Ballantyne get so mad when he was plunked in the ninth inning? So the situation again for y'all, even though we just mentioned it, is it's the bottom of the ninth, the score is tied, Mateo has walked and allowed a single to lead off the inning, so it's no outs, runners on first and second, and then he plunks Ballantyne. Clearly it was not intentional. Nobody in their right minds does that. So what do you think? What was the reason that Ballantyne got so upset, Joe?
He's just being Ballantyne, you know, the big pompous, you know, slugger that everybody is. Nobody, you know, anytime the big hitter for a team gets hit by a pitch, he gets pretty frustrated. I think you can see that in any form of baseball. But I don't think there's any need to plunk anybody in that situation. So it's kind of not really intentional in any shape or form, I don't think.
Right. Interestingly, I think both sides were warned after this because the bench is semi-cleared. That was interesting because, you know, it's not like he hit him in or near the head. I think he hit him in the arms. So it wasn't that big of a deal. But there we go. We went 1-2 in this one, courtesy of two walk-off losses. So it could have just as easily gone 3-0 for us or 2-1 for us as a certain somebody predicted. But instead it went 1-2 as a certain other someone predicted. So for three series in a row, I actually called exactly right. And I'm sad to say that the last two of those I called a 1-2 for the Tigers. So at this point in the week, the Tigers are sitting one game below 500 on the year. And it's time for me to stop being right about these 1-2s because I predicted a 1-2 against the Giants as well. We go in Friday, and actually, Joe, to be honest with you, I was not able to watch any of this game. We had Iwasada on the mound. They had Sugano on the mound. Sugano has the best ERA in the Central. Iwasada has the second best ERA in the Central. This is looking like it's going to be a low-scoring game.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? It was.
It certainly was.
Well, even lower than, I guess, low-scoring game, because the only run scored in the game was technically not an earned run. So,
right.
And that actually came off pretty quick early in the first inning. We started off with a walk from Itayama, and then Fukudome had a hit, and then Gomez got a single. But then the throw to try to get the runner at third, actually missed, and that was by, I think, Sakamoto, and
yes,
allowed a
love
run
it.
To score. So it was definitely a you know, advantageous, you know, run for us. But you know, we got one run in the first, and then followed up by Hadaguchi getting plunked again. Poor guy. And then Takayama hitting into a double play. So, you know, we start off the first inning with how we'd like to, with a run, even though it wasn't necessarily earned. It's still a run. So,
yep.
And then it kind of turned into a battle after that, a pitcher's duel.
Yeah, because the rest of the way we only managed four hits. Only one of those was for extra bases, and we got two walks, but we only threatened in the sixth. Outside of that first inning where we got the run and then we had bases loaded with one out. As for their side, man, Iwasada was on his game on this night.
Absolutely.
The only time he got into trouble, it seems, looking at the box score, is the fourth inning where he walked two guys but then induced a double play and then walked another guy. So he never had more than two guys on base and nobody ever made it past second base, I don't think.
Yeah, and three of his four walks were in that one inning. So we only had three hits and one walk outside of that one inning. So he really never had many base runners to begin with.
Yeah, one of those hits was an infield hit. The other two were both singles. And so there really was no good hits, I guess you could say, by the Giants. And Iwasada went the distance, his very first complete game shutout. 126 pitches, as you said, three hits, and including the fourth inning, four walks, seven strikeouts. So great for him. He gets his fourth win of the year, and finally his record on the year is better than Fujinami's. Heading into this week, they were both three wins and two losses, I believe, despite the great discrepancy in their ERAs. But Iwasada gets his fourth win. Good for him. We're off to a great start against the Giants at Tokyo Dome. What more could you ask for?
Not a lot. Well, maybe a couple more runs, but not such a nail-biting game.
Yeah.
But we'll take
it. Yeah, but with Iwasada on the mound and the way he pitched, it really wasn't that nail-biting because, like we said, beyond the fourth inning, they really didn't threaten at all. So
yeah, and then to note, this was the only game of the week where we did not have a fielding error. I think that's because there weren't many balls actually connected to off of Iwasada, so that's another good thing. But
definitely. And again, you know, the psychology of, or the psychological edge that a team gets and a player gets by throwing the complete game is something that I think is underrated, especially from the foreign perspective, that being the maybe the American or the MLB perspective of you know, you pay the relievers big bucks, bring them in to do their job. Guess what? Our guys ain't doing the job, first of all. Secondly, like I said, if Iwasada can throw a complete game shutout against them, it puts them in that psychological disadvantage the next time they have to face him. And it gives Iwasada the boost as well the next time he has to face pretty much anybody to say, hey, I can go nine innings and shut a team down. I'm ready to do it again. So I like it, even though he went 126 pitches. I'm okay with it. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I was... There was a lot of talk on the game whether he was going to come up in the top of the ninth because it was his turn to bat, so he was going to bat third in the inning. So they were saying they kept looking in the dugout and saying, "Okay, is he getting ready? Is he getting ready?" And I think if we would have had some runs on bases, I think he would have gotten pulled. But you know, with a strikeout and a grounder, you know, he came up and got up to the plate and just kind of stared at the pitcher and said, "Hey, come on, keep throwing him," with Matheson up, and just let him just zing three right in there and said, "Okay, good, thanks."
Let me get back on the mound and finish my job here.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, let's move on to Saturday. And this was a rare night game, especially at this time of year. They tend to play day games, but in the Dome, it doesn't matter. And then, of course, having a different game time than everybody else means maybe a better TV audience. I think maybe that's why they did it. Anyways, we bring Suguru Iwazaki, third-year pitcher, to the mound. And it is his second start of the year. And he's going up against Imamura, whom I've never heard of before, for the Giants. So Iwazaki... I think in his first outing, wasn't he victim of the bad bullpen? And even though we won the game, he didn't get the win. I could be mistaken, but I think that's what happened last week.
Yeah, I don't recall.
So I won't make you look it up. Okay, so anyways, let's get to the action here. Actually, the Giants got to him first. And that's kind of unfair to say, because technically what happened in that third inning, the bottom of the third, was he struck a guy out. He induced a liner to first. He walked the next guy. And then he induced a grounder to Luis Cruz. So it should have been three outs, except Hojo fielded that like a high schooler or worse. I mean, it was not a hard hit ball. He wasn't on the run. He fielded it all right. He planted his feet, threw it to first, one hopped it 4 feet wide of Gomez. I mean, it just looked really bad. And so what happened was then it was runners on second and third, I think. And Chono came in and hit, knocked them both in. So it was 2-0, despite the fact that Iwasaki actually pitched really well. And our guys decided, you know what? We're going to do you some good here, Iwasaki, because that wasn't fair. So you want to take us through the fourth, Joe?
Yeah, Shunsuke starts off with a walk. Fukudome gets a strikeout, but then here comes the oomph. And Gomez gets a single to right, followed up with a Hadaguchi single to right for an RBI. And then Haig comes up and cranks a double to get another RBI. And then Arai comes up and gets a single to right with another RBI. So
actually two
on that one. Yeah, because Haig had cut runners on the second and third with his double. So
yep.
Arai gets two RBIs for that. So we get four runs, absolute great consistency, bing, 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 bing. That's how you score runs. And it was good to see. But then Hojo comes
up. Could have been more, but Error Boy. Yeah,
Error Boy gets a double play to end the inning. So, four runs, I think we'll take it in a single inning,
Yeah, sure. Well, that got Hojo pulled, though, and maybe justifiably. I don't know. I mean, it's the Japanese way. I mean, if you blow it, sometimes you get pulled mid-game, and that's what happened after his fielding error and his hitting into a double play. So 4-2, and Iwasaki's going clean, and Imamura is going clean, actually. I'm surprised they kept him in as long as they did, because he looked very hittable, but he actually did a good job the rest of the way. Imamura, that is. Iwasaki got into a bit of trouble in the seventh when he recorded a couple outs. And then he allowed a double, and he was facing lefty Shigenobu. And after this, they had, it would have been 3-4 big righties coming up next. And so they were kind of like, well, you're a left-handed pitcher. You've reached 100 and some pitches, 120 pitches or so. So if you can get this guy out, you're out of the seventh clean. If not, we're going to pull you. And he walked him, which was really unfortunate, because I think he was ahead in the count. And it built up. He walked him. And that was the end of Iwasaki's outing. And it was actually a chance for the Giants to do some damage, because Sakamoto was coming to the plate, and we brought Ando in relief. How did he do?
One pitch wonder. Induced a grounder to short, and that was all she wrote.
That was nice, yeah. So that was the end of the seventh inning and the threat that they had. The eighth inning went clean as well, and then the ninth inning, at the top of the inning, we said, okay, well, we've got a pretty good lead. It's 4-2, but let's see if we can add to that. Hadaguchi comes up, bing, hits a deep ball to left. Is that his third home run of the week?
It was.
Yes, quite nice. And then Haig comes up, and remember, he's hit a double earlier in the day. And has his home run landed yet?
I don't think so. It's coming over towards me, I think.
Yeah, it's making its way either to Pittsburgh, or it's already past Kansai anyways. So that was it. Two straight solo shots. And then actually we had a chance for another run. We had Yamato on third with one out, but we could not push another run across the plate. 6-2. We're hoping now, okay, we've got a 4-run lead, and Mateo is no longer up on the big squad. Actually, he got sent down, I think it was actually this day, because of shoulder issues. So we bring in Kyuji, and he hasn't had a great week. How did he do in this one, Joe?
He started off with a strikeout.
Yeah, good.
That usually is not.
And then?
and then gave up two singles, and then a walk, and then
Wild pitch,
yeah, to get a run, and then a sack fly to get another run. So we've given up half of our lead. It's now 6-4. And then
at this point, actually, even before the sack fly, a home run is going to be another walk-off loss at this point.
Yeah, and so we're just like, oh boy, biting on the nails again, and then gets a foul fly to the catcher to end the game. So it was definitely not a clean relief inning, but I guess with four runs, we have some confidence that he can hold at least three off the board. So,
yeah, and it barely happened. So here we end up squeaking out another win, even though it should have been a comfortable win. You know, it's funny that we won two, at this point we've won two games in the week by two runs and one by one run, and the one run win felt a lot more comfortable than the two run wins.
Yeah,
because in that one run win we did not have to rely on our relievers to close out the game. So here we go into Sunday. We've won two straight in Tokyo Dome, which is great. We're 4-1 on the season there, which is unbelievable. And we're bringing Messenger in for the third one and a chance to sweep the Giants. And they're bringing non-gambling Takagi to the mound. gambling Takagi, of course, is not playing at all this season. He was also a Giant. Anyways, the clean for now, Takagi actually loves facing the Tigers and does a great job and actually did a great job in this one. But Messenger also did a great job in this one. Joe, no runs against in the first inning.
That's crazy.
Nice to see.
Yeah, might have to give him an extra start for that.
Yeah, for sure. So, unfortunately, the damage came in the third inning, and this came in the form of a Shigenobu RBI single, which he tried to stretch into a double and got gunned down. But then the very next batter, Messenger, gives up his third home run of the year to Mr. Sakamoto, a guy who we hate when he hits the bombs and love when he throws away errors. but it's 2-0 heading into the fourth inning. And, one captain shortstop hits a solo shot in the bottom of the third. The other captain shortstop hits a solo shot in the top of the fourth. Toritani returned the favor. Stroked one to left field. It barely cleared the wall, but they all count the same. So it's 2-1 now. And actually, that was our first hit of the game, Joe.
Yeah.
Our first guy that actually reached base. First hit of the game. So it's 2-1. The lead is cut in half. But that was it for our bats, really, the rest of the way. Toritani got another double. And then we had a couple of singles scattered the rest of the way, and that's all. And actually, they didn't get very much going the rest of the way either. They got one base runner in each of the next innings, except for the seventh, where they got nothing. So Messenger threw a complete game. Unfortunately, it was a complete game loss.
Yeah, eight innings. I don't know if you call it a complete game. But yeah.
I think technically in the stat books, it does count as a complete game. But six hits, three walks, two earned runs, and seven strikeouts. A good one for Messenger, especially considering how he did last Sunday. We will definitely take that any time of the week or any time of the month.
Yeah, it's just crazy how our bats are on and off. It's, it's either 10 hits or it's three or four hits. It's 10 hits or three or four. It's just, you can't find that seven or eight, nine hits.
And we went into this series, coming off of the Swallow series where we put out 20 runs. And in this one, we got eight. And that includes one run on Friday and one run on Sunday. So really low scoring, really unfortunate way to end the pre-interleague part of the season. But we are now sitting exactly at 500. We're sitting in third place. The good news is the Giants, until this win on Sunday, had lost seven straight. And it was their first time doing that in a decade. So they are sitting in fifth. In your face.
Yeah. The bottom of the bucket Bay Stars are actually in fourth. So.
Yeah, and they were actually at 500 until Sunday when they lost to the Carp. So they're nibbling at our heels as well. It's really tight in the Central, and really Interleague once again is going to maybe determine what happens as far as standings go.
Absolutely. Hopefully Hiroshima has their standard Interleague and just completely blows up. So
it'd be nice. It'd definitely be nice. All right, Joe. Well, let's talk about our choices for Player of the Week.
Yeah.
Every week, one tiger stands above the rest. He elevates his game to another level. He is the player of the week.
Right. Again, we got 20 runs in the first half of the week, and then 8 runs in the second half of the week. So a decent scoring run, actually. Decent scoring week, I should say, actually. And then as far as the pitching goes, we had a couple of really good starts, and we had a couple of really shameful meltdowns from the bullpen. A couple, or should I say like 4 or 5?
Yeah, the majority of the week.
I guess 4. Anything that wasn't a complete game was a meltdown by our bullpen.
Yeah.
So anyways, the bullpen guys, you get the anti-player of the week, but who do you got in for player of the week, Joe?
I'm going to give you my runner-up player of the week first, and that was Iwasada with his complete game shutout. So that was, you know, great to see. Definitely, I think, deserving of player of the week status. But we had somebody else that kind of came through with his bat that kind of just destroyed the week. So I'm going to give a player of the week to Haraguchi, who went 8 for 20. So batting 400, 6 RBIs, 4 runs scored, 3 strikeouts, 5 walks, and 3 home runs.
So those 5 walks include the 2 plunks or not include the 2 plunks?
I am not sure.
I think it includes them, but either way, yeah. I mean, he got on base through that, 5 times. So actually, I concur. I also give it to Haraguchi. Incredible week. The interesting thing is his 400 average on the week just barely pulled up his season average. I mean, I think he's hitting 382 now on the year or something like that. And so amazing.
Yeah. Haig actually had a really good week too. Good to see him getting some confidence back. So that's good with his bat. Gomez had a good week, solid week. So those guys were, helping a lot with the run support, both batting over 300. Yeah. So.
Yeah, we didn't mention it, but Haig actually had 3 multi-hit games on the week. And he actually sat one of the games. So 3 out of 5 multi-hit games. Looks like he's finding his timing again, or his, his bat for sure. And that's great. We need it. We definitely need it. So a couple series notes, just as I mentioned earlier, Mateo is down on the farm. He injured his right shoulder, and that's okay, because he wasn't doing us any favors in the past couple of weeks anyways. He went 5 straight outings, allowing at least 1 run. So it's good for him to get some time off. We brought up Koyo Aoyagi, who was our 5th round pick in the 2015 draft, and he did not see any action, but I'm assuming he will during Interleague. Otherwise, they would not have called him up. Also, I caught word today that we are calling up Rafael Dolis. He was eligible to be called up on Sunday, and he's getting the call up in time for Interleague. So we are dropping down Tanabo to make room for Dolis. So I'm guessing that he may end up being the closer, because I don't know if we can trust QG.
Yeah. We can bring in QG when we have a 5-run lead. That's about it.
Yes. Or if we're down 5 runs.
He can be the other Enokita that we have that kind of just comes in when things are really bad.
The right-handed mop-up guy. Yeah. Sure, we'll go for that. Okay. It's sad to say that, though.
But for as much as we're paying him, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah.
And we have another
he
year of this?
For sure. But, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Okay. Well, we are going to actually take a break from the Joe and T-Ray show, and we are going to talk to a couple of guys about Interleague. Hunching Tigers English. Hunching Tigers English. Hunching Tigers English. Topics. All right, so one of our guests this week on the show is Christian from Graveyard Baseball. And I think we've talked a little bit about him on the show, or mentioned him a couple times or whatever, but welcome to the show, Christian.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
It's great to have you on the show. And for those of you that don't know, Christian and his pal, Wes, they do a podcast for the Cebu Lions. And so if you're interested in checking that out, I'll put the link in the show notes, so feel free to check that out. But how's that going for you so far? How do you enjoy doing podcasting about the Lions?
Oh, it's been good. Just like that we're the exclusively all things Lions in English right now. Just happy to have some brand and really just be able to connect with both MLB fans and even Japanese speakers who want to practice English. So we get kind of the best of both worlds. We're happy for that.
All right. Nice. Well, and so you and Wes are both stateside, and so you're not actually here covering the team or being able to attend games or anything like that. So what's the time zone difference like, and how does that affect your ability to follow the team?
It's definitely crazy. I mean, I am 14 hours behind Japan. As of right now, I'm in Central Time out in Kansas. I'm a transplant, but enough of that. And then Wes is 16 hours behind Japan in Pacific Time Zone. So it's a 4 a.m. game for me if it's a night game, and then it's 2 a.m. For Wes if it's a night game. I used to be on the West Coast, so for me, what we would have to do is just kind of power nap our way. Or if there's a day we're not working, I mean, Wes was able to stay up. But for me, I just kind of power nap, go to bed a little earlier than I wake up. 4 a.m. is not too bad. It's a reasonable time for me. But on the West Coast, it is a brutal time zone because it's that in-between hour. It's not so late that you stay up, but it's not too early to wake up in the morning. So Pacific Time actually has it the worst for night games, 2 a.m. time there. So, but yeah, we are up, as our title speaks, Graveyard Baseball. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, it's good stuff, and I mean, you guys do like great quality coverage of not only the team, but you're also doing some overall PL stuff, and sometimes you even dabble in the Central League, so that's really cool. But the reason we've got you on the show today is because you can shed some light on a lot of the Pacific League for us as we're heading into interleague play. So the first thing I want to ask you is, like, what is your impression so far of the Pacific League in 2016? How has it kind of been developing, or What characterizes the PL so far this year?
Right now, it's been very chalk. The biggest expectation is who's playing for the losing rights against the Hawks. It's everybody versus the Hawks at this point. And right now, Chiba Adolte Marines are obviously in second in the standings right now, and they won the right to lose to them last year. But everyone else, it's kind of in the middle, or they're very bad because they have some very terrible flaws, whether it's bullpen or errors. I mean, that's what the bottom three teams right now have, is they commit too many errors. While the top three teams have had better pitching, a little bit better hitting, but mostly it's been the pitching has kind of summed up who's on top and who's not on top for the Pacific League.
Okay. Well, so have you been able to watch a lot of the games, or do you just kind of follow feeds, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, because of Pacific League TV, we're able to watch pretty much the Pacific League games. I mean, the Central, we have to do a little bit of digging, digging the hard way. We used to do that last year, but this year we figured out how to get Pacific League TV and actually pay for the legal service, so we're happy there. So it's nice because there's a split screen option, and we could watch all three games at once with two mini screens and one big screen.
Sweet. That's pretty cool. I wish the Central League would do a little something like that as well. What an amazing... I mean... Actually, to be honest with you, it's not so amazing as it is just, like, somewhat smart, and the Central is just somewhat not smart about marketing their game.
Yeah, so, well, we know that some things upstairs, and some guy named Watanabe controls that, so, yeah, a little brutal story there.
Look forward to that changing in the years to come, or at least it seems like it may, and so let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So, anyways, as everybody knows, your Saitama Seibu Lions are in the bottom half of the league right now, and they've just kind of been bouncing between fourth, and I think they even dipped down to sixth for a while, if I'm not mistaken.
It was about a couple days, correct? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it looks like they've got a 2-0 lead as we're speaking right now against Oryx, so that'll put some distance between the two of them at least. Anyways, so the Tigers are going up against two of the quote-unquote bottom feeders, I guess, in the Pacific in this first week. We've got the Rakuten Eagles on the road, and then we come home to face the Seibu Lions. Let's talk about the Eagles a little bit. I'm not sure how much you know about the team, but what does their lineup look like, or who are some of their key players, some of their key pitchers, stuff like that?
Now, the biggest key guy, really, it's been about just playing young guys, and their new manager, Masataka Nishida, has kind of taken in. He's inherited kind of a mess. Obviously, their big star is Takahiro Norimoto. You guys are going to see him in the front end of the week, so... Expected that. You're going to see a spot starter, most likely. And then you could possibly see Manabu Mima, who's a mid-rotation guy. He was undefeated until the Lions beat him last week, but he's very vulnerable, in my opinion. I mean, he had the first shutout of the season against Chiba early in the year, but he only struck out like two or three guys that game in his shutout. So I don't know if he's as good as maybe the stats indicate. So their pitching is vulnerable outside of Norimoto. But their offense is right in the middle. I've seen speed. I see better speed because last year they used to steal a lot, and that would backfire. Their manager last year was a little silly in that department. But Yeah, this year we're seeing a lot smarter offense, better hit for average. Takeru Okajima has been a very good leadoff hitter for them. It does hurt. One thing that has hurt them is Motohiro Shima is out and injured. I think he took a foul ball somewhere, and that's kept him injured. So he's not. You're not going to see him. Hijiri Sawa is a decent hitter. Toshiaki Imaye is okay. Though I think it was probably good that the Chiba Ultramarines let him walk. And then Genji Akaminai is the other key player as well. But a lot of average hitters, not as a lot of pop. Though Zealous Wheeler has been okay for them. There is not a lot of pop on the Eagles.
Okay. I heard that they brought Louis Okoye back up from the farm. He was their first round pick straight out of high school. And I think he got a little bit of playing time yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, do you think that they're going to kind of let him go during interleague? Like, do you think they're going to give him more playing time? Or do you think that he's someone we should keep our eyes on?
He's going to draw attention, but he hasn't done anything that's been flashy much. It's just a name right now, a household name. Really nice athlete coming out of high school, but he's raw. They're just using him as a defensive sub or a pinch runner. We haven't seen him start a whole lot, and actually, at the time of this recording, this is his first start or first game since his call-up. So he was called up actually today at the time of this recording.
Okay. Huh. Well, it'll be fun if we get a chance to see him play, at least just for, like you said, like the name brand, and just to see how this young, raw talent does. But so last year, I believe we won three straight against the Eagles. They were a slightly different team, and I think we faced, I don't even remember who we faced, but the names just aren't coming. Anyways, I don't know, like, they've got Zealous Wheeler as far as imports go, and who else have they got lined up in their pitching staff or in their lineup as far as foreigners go?
Foreigners right now, they actually just sent down Jeff at Amador, who's been disappointing. That guy this week he was sent down. It's like he's never seen a fastball, so that was bad. They have Cam Michelio, who's like a setup man, kind of average. And then there's Jake Brigham, who's a bullpen guy. Really nothing flashy. Kenny Ray's the other one who's so-so, but you're not going to see him because I think he'll start the back end of the week. The big issue with Rockettsen is their bullpen. There's been a lot of jokes about it, and Yuki Matsui is also struggling. That's the big killer for the Eagles is when your closer's bad, everything has gone wrong. So once their bullpen is in, anything can happen. Anything could happen. I think
sounds familiar.
We know what bad bullpens are like, and that's why Rockettsen is in dead last. But their starters have been okay leading up to this point.
Okay. Well, maybe that bodes well for the Tigers, since it seems like we tend to get off to slow starts in almost every game, and then it seems like the 7th, 8th, and 9th is when our hitting really starts to pick up. So that could be a perfect match for us. What do you think? How do you think the Tigers are going to fare in those three games? Are you got any kind of prediction for us?
I think it could take 2 out of 3. Say you beat the spot starter, you can beat Mima and lose to Norimoto. So I'm going to go chalk. I think 2 out of 3 is very possible.
Okay, well, we'll take that. I think it'd be nicer to see a 3 for 3, but, well, it could happen. All right, let's move on to your team. I mean, this is really the heart of our talk, I think, because you know this team front and back. So tell us a little bit about the Lions lineup this year, or some of the key players, some of the key pitchers that have been doing really well, or people that have been really disappointing.
Now, the Lions, really, it's all about offense. There's a very up-and-down offense where they can get fed off some very bad pitchers and do kind of poorly against really good pitchers. So it's kind of chalk there. They have pop. You got guys like Ernesto Mejia, who was right near the top of the league in home runs. Then there's Okawadi-kun, better known as Takeya Nakamura. He still has pop, and he's hitting pretty well as long as he's healthy. And then suddenly there's Takumi Kuriyama, the captain, who's been hitting pretty well at the start of this year. Obviously, last year, Shogo Akiyama had the hits record, and that got a lot of attention when he beat Matt Mertens' single-season record.
How's he doing this year so far?
He's not going to get the same number of hits, but he still does a great job getting on base. He has 37 walks already, and I think his OP, his on-base percentage at the time of this recording is .415. So he's still doing a very good job getting on base. That's his goal. He doesn't think about records or try to swing outside. That's a very big deal. See that he's still doing his job as a leadoff hitter.
Okay. Well, yeah, it sounds to me like there's definitely some potency there. And so I would assume then that the reason for the Lions' mediocrity would be its pitching?
Yeah, some of it is pitching and some of it is also errors. Some errors earlier, before 2 weeks prior, there was a lot of errors just piling up and meltdowns, mostly throwing errors. That's what led to at least the last place part at one point in the season. Really, the pitchers are disappointing. Guys that they had like Ken Tagame and Andy Van Hecken are already off the roster. Chunlin Kuo, another one, they're off the roster. And now they're just throwing in the kids and seeing what they're doing. So Kona Takahashi, first-round pick of 2014, also won the Koshin, if you remember, a few years ago. Then there's Shinzaburo Tawada, who was our first-round pick last fall, rookie, playing right away. Mm-hmm. Isamu Sato is playing, also a draft pick who's been developed. He's 21. He's been in the farm for a few years, but is a rookie this season. Yeah, so they're throwing a bunch of kids in there and seeing what they're doing. Yusei Kikuchi, of course, is the guy who was very hyped up, if you might have remembered, in 2009. He's now almost one of the older leaders of the rotation. So you got four kids, 25 and under, and that's how.
Okay.
That's what they're doing with the rotation. It's just letting them learn on the fly. And For the most part, we're okay with that. We're fine with that. We get to see growth, and hopefully as the season goes along.
Well, you know, if you think about the possibility of just, you know, burning players out for the chance of finishing second to the Hawks versus letting the young guys develop, and maybe in 2 or 3 years, you know, you'll be beating the Hawks or whatever, I would say that the latter is probably the wiser choice.
Yeah, I mean, we're perfectly fine with that. I mean, some of the pitchers just have become unwatchable. They can't strike guys out. There's no velocity, and there's all these things I can point out. But, yeah, they're basically just not getting guys out. That's the simple part why the rotation's been bad. Bullpen had its moments as well, but it's gotten better, with the exception of one game recently. But the bullpen's been decent. It's right in the middle of the Pacific League. I mean, I think the bullpen syndrome from last year's Central has hit the Pacific League this year. There's been a lot of interesting bullpen games. But the Lions have done a very good job with Kazuhisa Makita, making him the long reliever rather than having him as a starter. That's been a huge... That's only the reason why they're competitive and they're not in dead last. I think Makita has been a huge, big deal for them.
Okay, nice. Now, you mentioned Ernesto Mejia earlier, and obviously, you know, he has been hitting the cover off the ball at least at times. Who else do the Lions have as far as foreign help?
Foreign help, literally nobody. They've actually deactivated everyone else. I mentioned Chunlin Kuo was deactivated. CC Lee was supposed to be help from the bullpen, deactivated. And I already mentioned Andy Van Hecken. I think they gave up on him after five starts, deactivated. Though recently they just signed a guy named Felipe Paulino, literally hours before this recording. So Felipe Paulino might come in. Esmerlin Vasquez is the other one who's currently in our bullpen. He's an okay sixth, seventh inning guy, very inconsistent, but he's better than some of these other options we've had. So Vasquez, he's the other foreign help on the roster besides Mejia right now.
Okay. All right. So... how do you feel about the Lions' play of late, and then how do you feel about them heading into Interleague? Like, do you think they're going to have a pretty good... First of all, we'll look at the overall, since you are you know, someone who covers the Lions. What do you think their record is going to look like on the whole in Interleague?
I mean, right now I would say it'd be 500, but I would not be surprised if they finish like 8-10 or 7-11. But I think 9-9 is realistic. It's just there's too many ups and downs, some raw pitching... Well, and then hitting is so up and down as well. So I think 9-9 could happen.
Okay. And how about against the Tigers? What do you think?
Let's see. You guys are going to see Shinzaburo Tawada and Ryoma Nogami most likely. I don't know who's going to be the sixth starter. We've had a lot of five-game weeks. So I think the Lions can take 2 out of 3, but it really will depend on how Tawada does in that spot starter. So it's kind of like 2 out of 3, or the Tigers could take 2 out of 3. I don't think there's going to be a sweep one way or another on it. But Tawada is raw. He's raw and kind of questionable. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, last year the Tigers took 1 and the Lions took 2.
Yes, that's correct.
But so hopefully we can reverse that. But yeah, let's see what happens. All right, well, thanks for joining us today. And we will talk to you in a little bit about the rest of the league.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks. Hunting Tigers. Hunting Tigers. So we are talking interleague ball as we are heading into the interleague season here. And just like last year, it's going to be 18 games where we play three against each of the Pacific League teams. It'll be the opposite of last year, where the teams that we hosted last year will be going into their stadiums and the teams that we visited last year will be hosting this year. So our first week up, we are actually on the road for the first three, and then we are going to be at home for the next three. I'd like to welcome a special guest back to the show. He was with us, I believe it was after the first weekend of all the season. We've got Patrick with us from NPB Tracker. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's always great to talk with you. And how have you been lately anyways?
Oh, pretty good. I was actually in Japan in late April, and I caught three games at Jingu Kyujo. With my son. That's his favorite team, Yakult. So, So yeah, always great to be back in Japan. Always great to catch a few games. So, yeah, been pretty good. How about you?
Oh, yeah, I've been great. Actually, I guess, only been to as many games this year as you have then. but which teams did you see Yakult play while you were there?
So we saw Hiroshima twice and Yomiuri once. And the first game we saw was the game that Arai hit his 2000th hit.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so that was a nice moment. Unfortunately for my son, Hiroshima just completely obliterated Yakult on both the games we saw against the Carp, and that team really impressed me. And then they won against Kyojin that weekend.
Okay.
So yeah, always good to get to a couple of games, but yeah, the result was not too interesting.
Well, you know, it seems like so far the Carp are having the magical kind of year that the Swallows had last year. And I don't know if necessarily if either of those are kind of an anomaly, as in, you know, are the Swallows really as bad as they are as their record shows this year, or are they close to the 2015 model? And same thing with the Carp.
Yeah, I would say that that's actually a really good comparison, although the one difference is that, yeah, Colt didn't really turn it on last year until later in the season after... Really, after about late July. Yeah, the Carp are hot now. But it's the same kind of thing. Both of them have really hot offenses and really kind of pitching that's good, just good enough to keep them in games. Mm-hmm. And I think the Carp have a little bit more in the rotation than Yakult did last year. Well, maybe a lot more with guys like Johnson and Kuroda. But but the pitching hasn't been quite as good as it was in recent years with Maeda being gone and Osero being out completely and so on. So, they look like the team to beat right now anyway.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they definitely made a mess of us last weekend at Koshien. So, and they've been doing really well against us, you know, all year and all of last year for that matter. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about Pacific League ball. How has the season unfolded in the Pacific from your perspective?
Well, I think it's kind of gone as expected in some regards. Mm-hmm. SoftBank is running away with the title. I would say they've been even more dominant than the Carp have in the Pacific League or in the Central League. And the scary thing about SoftBank is that they're just getting warmed up, in my view. They had scrubs hitting at the top of the order for the first 2 months of the season. Yanagita was kind of just getting walked a lot, and his bat's really starting to heat up. So they're really just starting to bludgeon their opponents, and it's going to be it's hard to see anyone beating them the rest of the year. They've already got a 6-game lead over Lotte.
Yeah. Well, and they just swept Lotte, right?
And they just swept Lotte, and they had a couple of blowouts in that series too, if I'm not mistaken. I was just watching the highlights of yesterday's game, and then so the rest of the league, you've got Lotte, which is a nice team that doesn't really go away. A lot of talent on Nippon Ham, and then Cebu, I think, is kind of runs hot and cold. I'll be interested to hear Christian's better analysis, and then. Mm-hmm. And then the doormats with Oryx and Rakuten. So more or less like expected.
I suppose so, yeah. Very apt descriptions of these teams, especially, you know, Lotte that just doesn't seem to go away. I mean, that was definitely true of them last year. And, it seems like they got off to a really good start this year. And lately they've been struggling a little bit, but they definitely have a lot of good components there as well. Anyways, we want to look, at least for today, at the first week of the Tigers action. We are going up against the Rakuten Eagles and the Cebu Lions, and you kind of gave us a little blurb about each of them, but I'm wondering if you can talk in a little bit more detail about the Eagles first off. Who are some of their key hitters or their key players in their lineup that we need to look out for?
Yeah, for me, the Rakuten lineup is really built around three guys. So the first is a catcher, Shima, an outfielder, Okajima, and then first baseman, Ginji. And the three things, the things that those guys have in common for me is that they all make contact. And in their good years, they're capable of hitting for a good average. And Okajima in particular draws a lot of walks. So they all have kind of solid batting average and on-base skills. What they don't have is power. Okay. None of those guys is really a threat to hit any home runs. And this year you could put the center fielder Hijirizawa in that category as well. Okay. It's another guy with a good contact skills, gets on base, good base dealer too, but absolutely no power. And so that's kind of the weakness of their lineup. They've got a bunch of guys who can make contact and maybe get on base, but really just no serious power threats in that lineup at all. As a team, they only have 20 home runs so far. By contrast, Brandon Laird has 17 by himself. And I forget how many Ohtani has, but he's got a lot this year.
In a very limited number.
He doesn't hit every day.
Yeah,
he doesn't play every day. So, you know, when they were successful a few years ago with Tanaka, the other thing that they had was they had all those guys, all those same guys that I mentioned who can get on base, but they also had Andrew Jones and Casey McGee in the middle of the lineup, and both of those guys hit about, I don't remember the exact number, but about 28 to 34 home runs each. So you had these guys getting on base coupled with a couple of bats in the middle of the order, you know, to knock him in. And I think that's what they've been looking for the last couple of years with Johnny Gomes this year and Kevin Youkilis. Was it 2 years ago or was it last year?
2 years ago, I think.
Yeah. So they'll bring in these established major leaguers with some pop, but unfortunately they haven't found another Jones yet.
Yeah.
So until they find a way to get some power into the lineup, they're going to have to kind of grind out the runs, and it hasn't really worked that well. I guess they aren't last in the league in runs produced. But they have 128. Oryx has 167, and then the next lowest is 221. So there's a, you know, it's going to be hard to compete.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing with Rakuten is that they've got some pretty good young starters. They've got Norimoto,
yes,
who's kind of the successor to Tanaka. He's not as good, but you know, he's sort of a reliable. I guess you could call him the ace because he's the best pitcher on their team. I think he's more like a solid number two pitcher. But, you know, good fastball, good slider, strikes a lot of guys out. I guess you could call him an ace. He's a 200 strikeout guy. So he's good. And then you have Kamata and a couple of other guys in their rotation who are having respectable years, but their bullpen has just struggled. And let me pull it up. So I was looking at the ERAs of the leaders in appearances. So they have Fukuyama with 22 appearances, 4.63 ERA. They have Yuki Matsui, the closer, who's been quite good in his career, 20 appearances, 6.05 ERA. They have this guy, Koji Aoyama, 18 appearances, 7.36 ERA. And then they have Kaneto, who's been pretty good, 2.63 ERA. And then if we go further, this guy, Hamaya, 12 appearances, 6.23 ERA. So the bullpen has been losing them lots of games.
Yeah, sounds that way.
Yeah, so it all adds up to a team that's just not that competitive at the moment. So they're 16 and 30. They're getting outscored. They've got 188 runs that they've scored and 250 that they've given up. Only 20 home runs. So yeah, they're in a rebuilding year, shall we say. And I guess one other point, they looked reasonably good at the beginning of the year, but over the last couple of weeks, they've really been getting blown out a lot. So we have a 12-3 loss against Ohtani today, or yesterday, and we have a 7-1 loss, 7-0 a couple of weeks, 8-0, 10-2, 7-1, 9-8, 13-12. So these are all losses. So these are all losses since May 14th, so over the last 2 weeks.
Hey, one more question for you, Patrick, if you happen to know this. Would you say Cobo Stadium happens to be a hitter's park or a pitcher's park or neither?
Well, it's hard to call. it's hard to say because I do think it feels like a bit of a smaller park, but it's hard to tell because the team that plays there has so few offensive threats. if this was an average hitting team, then you know we might have a better sense of that. Or I might at least. I do think it's an easier park to hit in than Koshien. So, especially for visitors, I think it's a bit smaller. Early in the year, it's up north, so it does get cold there. I remember seeing snow flurries in a game that I was watching. Once at in Sendai, I wasn't there. I was watching it on TV. But so it does get cold earlier in the year, and cold environments really favor pitchers. So I think on warm days it probably plays a little bit more of a hitter's park, and I think on cold days it probably plays more of a pitcher's park.
Gotcha. Okay. Good. So what do you think the Tigers are going to do against the Eagles? How many wins do you think they can get in those three games?
I think they can get three. I think the Tigers should really have blood in their eyes and for this series. This is a team that's on its heels and really slumping, and you know every win's going to count in a year like we're seeing in the Central League. So
right.
So they really got to go for it and make sure that they get at least two out of three and preferably a sweep from this team.
Certainly. I think they're going to be facing Norimoto. That's what Christian was telling me. So hopefully we can even pull one off there. Maybe we can get to him a little bit early and then, really go over the top of the bullpen or something like that. Anyways, let's move into the Lions series, which we're going to be playing at Koshien. Tell me a little bit about the team, how they're doing, all that kind of stuff.
So, I kind of just instinctively like the Lions a bit better. It's a lot easier to like a team that has the veteran talent that you know to expect from. So I think the Lions story kind of starts with their offense, and they have kind of this murderer's row, so to speak, with Mejia and Okawari-kun, Nakamura. Mm-hmm. In the middle of that lineup, they've also got Akiyama, the Shogo Akiyama, the outfielder who broke Mertens' hit record last year,
right.
And he's a guy I've liked for a long time. I liked him as a guy with a great glove and who can maybe hit 270 or 280 with something like 14 or 15 home runs, and he seemed to mostly be fitting that mold until last year when he just broke out completely and went insane with what he hit 360 or so. So he seems to have fallen back to earth a little bit, but he's still hitting around 300. And anytime you have a good on base threat, and then guys who hit home runs, you're going to score some runs. And that's how it's been. They lead the league in home runs with 47.
Mm-hmm.
The pitching has been and defense, I should say, as well, has been sort of a different story. Takayuki Kishi, their ace is injured, and did Christian tell you what he got hurt with? It slipped my mind. I don't think he did. He left a game about a month ago, and I forget what exactly he injured, but he's out, and I'm not sure when he's coming back.
Okay.
He's a good sort of MPB type pitcher who doesn't throw that hard, but has great control and some good breaking pitches. And then you have Kikuchi, who's another one of my favorites, is the left-hander. I'm kind of partial to him for his Koshien days from a few years ago. And the other guy I really like is Makita, who's an underhand, sidearm, underhand, how do you say, submarine pitcher. So right. I just like any submarine pitcher because they're so much fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and the pitching is, and besides those guys, the pitching is kind of, well, I guess there's Kona Takahashi too, the young pitcher. I forgot about him.
Yes.
Right. So yeah, he's emerging as well. But aside from those guys, you know, they're kind of average, you know, kind of not too impressive. And Tawada hasn't done anything yet. They signed an American named Andy Van Hecken, who is Van Hecken is one of these guys that I instinctively pull for because he was you know, long term AAA pitcher who went over and played in Korea and maybe Taiwan and kind of worked his way up to MPB. And you know, anytime you kind of have these working man ball players, those are the guys I really like to succeed because those are the guys who have been grinding it out, and you know they. You know, for how many years and they get their shot at making a decent living in Japan or Korea. And those are the guys you really like to succeed, you know, more than a Gomes, for example, who's made millions of dollars for his American career. So,
right.
So, unfortunately he hasn't done much. So we'll see if he ever, reemerges and provides some value, but he had a string of bad starts and then got demoted. And, you know, a lot of times when that happens, they don't ever come back. And I saw a blurb. I don't know if the deal is final, but they've signed or agreed to sign Felipe Polino, who is, who's kind of a guy with a great arm, but bad control. So, so one of those guys. And so we'll see guys in come to Japan with good fastballs and, you know, and hard breaking stuff, but no ability to command or limited ability to command their stuff. And sometimes that works out. Sometimes they, you know, the ball works better for them or you know, they dial it back a little bit and they can get their stuff over the plate a little bit better. And sometimes that really works.
Right.
And other times it doesn't. So we'll just have to see how it goes with Polino.
In your experience, Patrick, or in your experience watching, I should say, do you find that guys like this, when they agree to sign partway through a season, how quickly are they able to get over here and get into the action? Like, does it usually take a couple weeks, a month, or is it like pretty instant?
I think it's different from player to player. I think it's depends on the league they're coming from and whether they're in shape or not. You know, what part of the world that they're in. I think that going to Japan from the eastern part of America or the west part of America is a little bit of a different experience. I've done both. So, yeah, it really depends from player to player. I would say at least a week or so. A lot of times when a player gets signed mid-year, they just practice for the first couple of days. And there's always that, that news article, like Renshu Goryu, you know, for the new Gaijin player that comes in. So probably we won't see Polino in the Hanshin series. They're playing what later this week, right?
Right. Yeah. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, if there's a rain out in one of those days.
Probably won't see him.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but that's fine. We can leave them to somebody else. So it sounds like the tail of the tape on the Lions is watch out for their hitting and enjoy facing their pitching, or at least to an extent, unless they happen to be you know, on their game on that one particular day.
I think Kikuchi's going to be tough on Hanshin's left-handed hitters, but I think the other guys will be okay, if they get Kikuchi, that is.
Okay. Perhaps with yourself and definitely with me, like... we don't really have knowledge of who the Tigers might be facing, but do you have any thoughts on how this one might go as far as wins and losses?
Yeah, I think it's pretty even between the two. I think, Yeah, but I think Hanshin has a chance to, or maybe this is a wishful thinking. I think Hanshin has a chance to be competitive and get a couple of wins here. I think the thing to look out for overall is that I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, the Central League always seems to have a disadvantage over the Pacific League over the history of Interleague. At least over the last 5 years in particular. And I've kind of thought of it as kind of the graveyard of contention for the last 2 years, because in 2014, the Carp were having a great early part of the season, and then they struggled in Interleague, and then they never really got it back together, and they kind of limped to the finish. And I think finished second or third. And that was a year that I thought they were going to win the title. And most people probably won't remember that last year, the Bay Stars actually had a really good spring, and they were in first place at one point. And something
they
like
they were 10 games above 500.
Yeah, they were
just before Interleague.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, and last year in Interleague they went 3-14-1, and they were never in contention again the rest of the year. So there's something of a curse there. And I think this is really going to be a test for the Carp, to see if they can come through and keep their winning record, or if they just kind of reset the table. So for whatever reason, the Central League seems to struggle. Hanshin last year was about 500. Let's see, they were 10-8 last year.
10-8. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was the best of any of the Central League teams. So as a Central League team, getting out of Interleague with a 500 record has been kind of a success the last couple of years.
Sad.
yes. But I don't know. With Hanshin, I think they should be smelling blood, and they should have a chance to go in winning fewer than 2 out of 3 against Rakuten would be like a failure in my view. And then, right. But if they can go in there and sweep them, and then go into Cebu Dome and take 2 out of 3 or sweep them as well, which I think they can do. I think they have the talent for it. And they could be looking in pretty good shape, but, that's sort of the thing to watch out for. For whatever reason, the Central League has just not performed in Interleague the last 4 or 5 years. So, we just gotta grind out some wins and beat them. And if they can do that, they'll probably have a good advantage over the rest of the league.
Well, I'll agree with you certainly that this first week is crucial for the Tigers, and I think they need to get off to a good start because they are playing a couple of definitely winnable teams. And after that, when they have to face Lotte in their yard and Nippon Ham in their yard, it might be a little bit more of a challenge, but certainly this first week they got to do it. So hopefully they will be able to. I'd love to see them get 4, if not 5 wins this week.
Yeah. I think less than 4 would be bad, but I think 4 is certainly the minimum achievable level, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Patrick. Well, thanks for joining us this week. We appreciate your insights and all the knowledge that you bring to the table and to us as we get ready to play the Pacific League. So appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I'll be back anytime.
All right, sounds good. All right, well, that was interesting. I hope that we got some insight into our first two opponents in Interleague, the Rakuten Eagles as well as the Cebu Lions. So it's going to be fun to see how Interleague goes. Actually, let's jump right into our predictions.
What's going to happen with the record going to be? What's going to happen with the record going to be? What's going to happen with the record going to be? What's going to happen with the record going to be?
See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 prediction. See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 prediction.
So we're going into... what's it called? Kobo Stadium or something like that? Up in Sendai, anyways, against the Rakuten Eagles. They're in last place, and they have been stinking it up lately. I think they had a 9-game or 10-game losing streak that they snapped, and then they proceeded to start another losing streak. So they are just floundering.
They're really floundering. 16-30.
Yes.
So,
and then we've got the Saitama Seibu Lions. We'll be hosting them this time around. Last year, we went 1-2 against them, as I mentioned when I talked to Christian. And they pounded us in their barn because they've got some great bats. So, Joe, what do you think? How are we going to do in our first week of Interleague?
I am still going to call for the first 4-2 week of the year. So I'm going to go 2-1 against both, hopefully. But I can see it go 3-1 and then 1-2, or 3-0 and then 1-2. But we're going to look for that 4-win week at some point.
Okay. All right. We're sticking to the 2-1, 2-1. And you're on a 1-series streak as far as correctly predicting. I'm going to actually say we go big. 5-1.
Wow.
I'm saying sweep of the Eagles, even though we face Norimoto. And then we're going to take 2 out of 3 from Saitama because we're playing in our barn. Because we've got Iwasada and Messenger going against them, I think we at least take 2 there. So I'm going 5-1 this week.
All right.
Make it happen.
I'd like to see that.
I'd like it too. And I like the fact that we're both predicting big weeks. And this has to be our big week of Interleague for sure. We have to get off to the great start.
Absolutely.
Because we've got some really tough opponents coming up in the weeks to come. And as you heard Christian and Patrick talking earlier about the two teams that we're facing this week, they will be back for more talks about the other teams next week and the week after, so look forward to that. All right, I think we have gone beyond overtime here, but real quick, we're going to squeeze in the fantasy update.
Don't you want it? Can't you feel it? Your fantasy, Tigers fantasy.
Hey everyone, it's your boy Zorny here, and I was really bummed, you know, about our past series losses against the Carp and the Swallows. Well, you know what? Who cares? Who cares? We beat the freaking Giants! Yeah! And it feels so good and it feels so right. Nothing heals these deep wounds better than beating your old rivals at their own nest in front of their own crowd and pounding them hard. You know, Iwasada pitched a gem in the first game against the untouchable Sugano. Not this time. And yeah, Iwasada got the victory. Don't ask me how, but he made it. Now, I'd like to bring something to the table. Something very critical. What is happening to Hojo? I mean, so much lack of attention. Sometimes I keep asking myself, is he really ready? Is he comfortable playing second? Shouldn't he be playing another position like, let me think, shortstop Toritani? Maybe. Okay, anyways, Jimbo's players are starting to heat up, but that doesn't really bother me. So, Jimbo, keep trying. And to T-Ray, just 3 words. Tables will turn. That's it for my week.
This is T-Ray, and this is your Fantasy Minute. Guys, this is getting kind of boring, isn't it? I mean, seriously? It's just too easy to be at the top in this. Finally, you guys have more RBIs than I do, when you add your totals together. Finally, you've got half the home runs that I have, when you put your totals together. Seriously, guys. I mean, you really think you're competing here? Time for you to go to boot camp. Time for you to get farmed. Time for you to get rehabbed. Zorny, I think you need to follow Mateo down to the farm. Jimbo, I think you're right about at Iwata status right now. Anyways, I think I'm going to go take a nap.
It's here now. You just listen.
Hey guys, Jimbo here. Another week down and my predictions are coming true. Yes, that's right. I believe it was week 1 when I said, down but not out. My boys are coming back. Messenger, that's right, Halloween's over. He's coming back. 2 runs in 8 innings. That's some pretty good pitching right there. Just thank my lucky stars I didn't pick up Fujikawa. Whoever did that. Ah, must be thinking they're a bonehead right now. Take off those rose-colored glasses. Fujikawa was done years ago. Now we're just recognizing it. Well, some people who are behind the times are recognizing it. Haig got another home run in. Yes, he's waking up. He'll produce. Toritani, he's hit a couple home runs, like a home run a week now. He's not a big hitter, but he's waking up. My boys are coming back. You guys better be ready.
Okay, thanks, guys. It's always a joy to hear from you guys. And, you know, you guys put me to shame with your funny comments and stuff. So thanks again for, you know, playing the game with passion and following the game with passion as well. Joe, next year, I expect you to be in on fantasy.
We'll give it a whirl.
All right, excellent. Well, we're going to wrap things up because, like I said, we have been going super long here. I hope you all have enjoyed the show, and my apologies again for the one-day delay in getting it out to you. But it's been a blast. We're going to be back next week for episode number 33. Joe, it's been fun having you. Anything you want to share with everybody before we leave?
Just enjoy your Tigers baseball.
All right, well, we'll do. Stay in touch with us the usual ways, Twitter, Facebook, and email, and the website. It's all going to be in the show notes, and we'll catch you in a week's time. Bye-bye. ありがとうって今は言わせて